This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin, 2011.
Thank you for being here. Is it a bunch of East Coast people, and so it's really 9:30 for you? Or okay. Well, this is, as you know, the first one, and it's early. And when Lori mentioned to you all that I worked for M. Stoner, I hope this isn't like the announcement that the flight attendant makes, where he or she says you're on a flight to Orlando, and if this is not where you intended to go, now's the last chance to leave the plane. It is true, I did move to working for M. Stoner about 6 weeks ago, but before that, I was on a campus. I worked at the College of William & Mary in Virginia for 22 years. I was in the IT organization there for about 12 years, and then the last 18 months, 20 months I was there, I was the first director of creative services. So hopefully that gives you enough background about me. There are a couple of folks from William & Mary Creative Services here. They know the story already, so it must just be that they want to make sure I get this right now that I'm not on the inside anymore and that I don't exaggerate anything or tell any tales I shouldn't tell. So I feel like I'm loud. Do I feel loud to you all? Okay, thanks. So I just want to get a sense of the group. How many of you are already talking on your campus about creating some sort of creative services organization? Okay. And how many of you are already part of a creative services team? Oh, that's cool. And how many of you dream of doing this, but you know that it will just never happen at your campus? It's just a change that's way too big. I will tell you that I worked for the CIO before we created creative services, and I started to warn him as I could see this was happening on our campus, and he said to me at one point, that kind of organizational change just does not happen at William & Mary, so we don't have to worry about this. So it did happen for us, so those of you who are a little bit more skeptical, maybe this will convince you. All right, so let's just head right into it. I think we ought to start by talking about what it is, and you know, it can be a lot of different things, but essentially what I mean when I say creative services is we're talking about a team of people where the capabilities and skills and tasks and responsibilities are blended across mediums. So the idea is that you might have a writer on that team, and if you do, that writer writes for the web and writes for social media and writes for video scripts and writes for print. And perhaps you have designers on those teams, and they design for web, and they design for Facebook, and they design title slides for video. And perhaps a technologist on a creative services team is somebody who manages a CMS or understands the way to integrate social media with your primary web presence or understands web architecture. So again, you're just blending the skills of people and looking at them across multiple mediums. At William & Mary, what we were ended up responsible for was the top-level web presence, the portal, the content management system. We had the CMS administrator on our team, lots of web application development skills on the team, photography, print, multimedia, major publications, some video, even though we never got a video resource to do the work for us. So that just gives you a sense. So in recent years, you all probably know this, there has been a trend towards these kinds of units on campuses. I think it is certainly a more holistic way to approach your communication challenges and your communication goals. So I think there is a trend towards this kind of a unit. I think the bailiwick changes from campus to campus. You know, sometimes it includes this thing and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it includes that thing, but we can talk about those specifics a little bit later. All right, so here's what we're going to do in the next probably 30 minutes, because I want to make sure we have lots of time for questions, especially since some of you are already in these kinds of units. I want to hear what you all have to share with the group. And by the way, this presentation is going to be available, so I've got a link at the end of my slide that will take you to, or in my presentation that will show you a website you can go to. We're going to talk about four things. We're going to first talk about what problem we're all trying to solve, and then we're going to talk about imagining a bright future. And then we're going to talk about what we wish for and what we're going to do if we get it. And finally, take it from someone who knows. So I'm going to give you some lessons learned from my time as a director of creative services. All right, so let's dive right into it. So think of me as a really good higher ed therapist who's seen it all, and I'm so good, remarkably, that I can tell you what your problems are before you even lie on my couch and tell me. And the reason I say this is I think it's pretty much same story, different campus. When you talk about communications, a lot of the things that we're all facing, even though we're on different kinds of campuses and in different kinds of schools. And let me try to prove what I mean by asking you to raise your hand or say amen, if you choose, to any of the following statements if you think they might be overheard on your campus, okay? So we're still trying to control the message and keep the old communication model alive. Nobody yet? Okay. We have designers, but they don't do web. Hey, there you go. All right. We have some professional writers, but they only write news stories and press releases for the homepage. I knew that would be popular. This is one of my personal favorites. We know it'll be expensive, but we have to send this project off campus to a design firm that we've worked with for years because we don't have the expertise to do this in-house. We need to print 1,800 copies of this. We're pretty sure no one's reading it. So we're going to talk about putting it online next year, next academic year. And then another good one. I'm not very creative, but here's a brochure I designed, and I want to put it on my website. Okay. So what I'm saying here with this slide is same story, different campus. And I think what we all want is the same thing. What we all want is to bring together a bunch of really talented people with really great skills and have them all working together in the same unit, and I would recommend the same physical space, telling the story of your campus with one voice. So, all right, so how do you make this happen? I think you have to, when I say how do you make this happen, what I mean is how are you going to combine what probably is separate units in your university and merge them into one high-performance engine of creativity. What steps do you take? In my opinion, what you do is you forget the past and you ignore the present and you close your eyes and you imagine the future. Now, I know this is a very simplistic piece of advice and it's a lot harder to do, but I still think you should try to do it. And this is, there's one step that we took at William & Mary that actually might surprise you a bit. We formed a committee. And I know that is the dreaded and default answer for what when we have a higher ed problem. That's what we do, right? We form a committee. We sometimes call it a task force to make it sound like it's going to be more action-oriented. And then nothing happens, right? Or the committee struggles for a while, comes up with something great, but it never gets funded or implemented or, you know. So, we did set up a committee. It was a small group. We tried to run it in a really grassroots kind of way where we talked about what was possible. We ignored current organizational charts and reporting relationships. We had a few meetings. We talked very concretely about what we were going to be doing. And then we did a handful of focus groups with people who do communications on campus. And the reason we did that was because we wanted to be able to go to the administration and say, the people in the trenches think it would be great if we had an in-house creative team. This is what they said to us. This is who they talked to. Because sometimes when you try to push these things forward into senior administration, the resistance is, does the campus really want this? You know, am I going to get pushback? What kind of political capital am I going to have to expend to make this happen? And if you can go in and say, here's what we think we ought to do, and here's what people are saying they want, you know, you might be able to lay the groundwork a lot better. We did write an official report. It was fairly short. I've got a link to it at the end of the presentation, so I'm happy to share that with you. I wrote it in a way that was both direct and emotional. Emotional writing isn't usually used probably for business settings, but I felt like we might be able to get away with it and it might make our case a little bit better. So I'm going to show you a couple of paragraphs from ours. So using emotion, this was the first paragraph of the report. William & Mary is a place of ideas, exceptional education, and unlike any other university in America. In my view, we are struggling to consistently represent who we are and what we do to those who know us and to those who know of us. A creative services operation could be an engine of creativity, a place where people, talented people who love the college, can use multiple forms of communication to tell the William & Mary story. Not like what you normally see in a report at your university, but I don't know, I thought, well, maybe they think we're really creative, you know, if we write a report like this. Another paragraph, very direct language. Currently, a number of committees are working hard to coordinate communication opportunities. I think William & Mary could do better. A creative services team could come to work every day thinking about ways to explain and promote what happens on our campus. A creative services team could produce an integrated splash where individual creative elements like photos and language and graphics all come together to make a lasting impression. Now, you have to think about your own context and your own audience and your own campus. But I think that if you can use really direct language and convey it in an emotional way that's passionate, maybe you gain something. You'll see when you actually look at the report. Is it where I'm standing? The closer I am to that. Oh, dear. They're going to just want me to be right here in the middle. Hang on. The other thing that we had in our favor at William & Mary at the time that we were doing this is budget cuts, which probably a lot of you have that, had that, are going to have it. And so we talked a lot in the report about how this would save money. And that was not unintentional. I mean, that's a pretty compelling argument. All right, so you get what you wanted. And I'm moving kind of at a high pace here and a high level, so we can come back and talk about details, and I'm going to stop in a minute for some other questions. But essentially, for us, it happened. In January 2010, we established creative services at William & Mary. What that meant was we took 7 people out of the IT organization. They reported to the CIO. I was the director of web services. Me and a team of 6 people blended with the Office of Publications. The publications office had 6 people. They did print and university publications and photography. And so we brought the 2 groups together, physically moved us into 2 houses that were very close to each other, and we became part of the central communications unit at William & Mary. I reported to the VP for strategic initiatives. We were all pretty excited when it happened, but for me, actually, I knew that the hard work was just beginning. The hard work was not getting the approval to set up the unit. The hard work was the first year, because it's a huge transition, and it's a huge management challenge, and I tried to make that really clear to our administration before we moved ahead. So why is the first year tough? Because you have a group of people who are really enthusiastic, but they're in a brand new organization, and they're not really, they knew what they were supposed to do when they worked in IT or in publications, but when they came together in one group, and they knew these expectations were pretty high on campus, they weren't necessarily sure what to do right away. We had to put new processes in place. We had to figure out how we were going to manage our projects. We had to figure out how we were going to describe ourselves to the campus, because the language you use to describe what you need to get the administration to say yes is different than what you tell the person you meet, you know, at the coffee shop. And there were a lot of initial concerns about what do we do and what do we not do. You know, if somebody comes to us and says we want you to print table tents for a meeting, do we do that? Because we had in the old publications office. Somebody comes and says we want a microsite, do we do that? So you spend a few months really trying to figure out what everybody's going to do and how it's all going to work. This is something that, I don't know if these guys even know this, this is something I don't think I did as well at as I should have. After about a year, we wrote an internal mission statement. And the reason we did it was because amongst the team, people were really confused, not confused, but they were like, again, what are we? And nobody, are we marketing? Are we communications? Do we do stuff for the academics? And once we wrote the internal mission statement, where we all got together and talked about it, people started to feel a lot better. Because there's a lot of anxiety that comes from not being able to describe to someone on the street what your unit does on campus, right? So just to give you a little bit of language, here are a couple of things that we included in our mission statement. We offer the skills and expertise of an award-winning creative services in-house agency. A little bit aspirational there at the beginning, but not now. We want to bring currently outsourced creative work in-house. And we promote and explain academics. That one was really important to us because there were already a lot of people on our campus who were talking about events and news. I don't know if that's true on yours. But it's harder to talk about the core, the academic experience, and what that means for a student. So we decided to sort of take that on too, and to think about promoting that stuff since it is important and no one else was really focusing on it as much as we thought they should. All right, so I'm gonna talk about this one slide and then I'm gonna stop for a minute. I suggested this presentation because I think within the Higher Ed Web Association organization, we do a great job of sharing information. In my experience, a lot of what we share is based on web, best practices, technical standards, technologies, solutions. Not as much sharing goes on about management challenges that we all face. I think there's a little bit of it, but maybe there could be more. So I just thought this would be a great way for us to start some of that, and that you could learn some lessons from what I've already been through. So before I go into the next part, I just want to stop and see if there are any burning questions that you all have about how, I mean, I know I didn't talk about a lot of detail, it's pretty high level, but if you have specific questions about how we got the organization established. Yes. Yeah, I think that on some campuses, if you have the right people and the right leadership of those different units, that you can probably still accomplish a whole lot and maybe even do great work. For us, maybe it was that William & Mary doesn't have one administration building, and so we're all spread out in a lot of different places. And so you have the best of intentions, that you're gonna keep each other informed and you're gonna talk about what you're doing. But we ended up just showing people when we were done kind of what we were doing and sharing it with them, but we weren't really working on it necessarily collaboratively. So that's one thing. The other thing is we wanted to reduce print on our campus. I mean, there was a pretty strong reliance on print that we wanted to reduce, and we felt like one way to do that is bring that web component with the print component. Frankly, on the publication side, we had some people whose skills were pretty out of date. They had not, you know, sort of kept pace with what modern communications means. And so we thought it was a way to get those folks some new backgrounds, some, you know, give them projects to work on that would teach them how to function in a different way. And I don't think we would have gotten that. We also, when I led the web redesign project at William & Mary, and so I did that working for the CIO, and then I took responsibility for the main website. And when that happened in 2008, it was much more common to see IT as responsible for front-facing, public-facing web presence. That's not as common anymore. I think it's moving back towards the marketing and public relations folks. So even I, after a couple of years, started to feel like, I don't know that I really belong in IT anymore. I kind of feel like I belong with the communications folks. Now, I wanted the CMS administrator to come with me, and he did, so that was good. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but does that give you some sense of, good, yes?
You had mentioned, you know, some of the language you use to convince administrators that this is a good idea. Is that the same language you use for the general university community to tell them what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that you'll see in the internal mission statement is some of the best things our team did were things that no one asked us to do. And some of the best things we did were things that we didn't ask first. We just did it, and then we got far enough along. There was so much momentum behind it, and then we sort of unveiled it. And everybody went, oh, cool, a campus calendar. You can hear more about that when Tina talks about it later in the week, in the conference. We tried to use some emotion to convey, you know, the fact that everybody's struggling to do something great for William & Mary. We used video to talk about it in some ways, because a lot of people were still sort of challenged by video, and the idea that there could be a team that could support that was also useful. Yes? I was going to be a high school Spanish teacher. And I spent the first 16 years of my career working for human resources organizations. I was a human resource management professional. And then I moved to IT because I knew how to manage projects and how to do training. When I went to IT, I knew how to use email and Microsoft Word. And then during my time in IT, I took the web services over the responsibility for web services. And so, yeah, not the back. I mean, you know, it's the typical learn while you do the job kind of training. So, yes. The whole kit and caboodle came our way. So, well, I'm, you know, you know how campuses are. It's decentralized, right? There's like other communications people outside the central communications unit. But no, actually that was one major disadvantage is that the IT organization at William & Mary has struggled in some ways to kind of figure out how to do the web-based things that they need to do without a web team to give that responsibility to. So. All right. Well, I'm gonna move into some lessons learned the first year. I wrote a series of blog posts about this. I started on New Year's Eve 2010. I wrote 12 different ones, and so some of what you're gonna see here is just sort of high level ideas and thoughts that I had that you could find in those blog posts, and then we can go into some of the detail of these that you might be more interested in during the Q&A. So some people just want services. Everybody's a designer, right? So in my experience, a lot of times in creative services, customers will come into you and they already know exactly what they want and how they would like you to do it. And to these folks, I started to say, you want services, and what we do is creative services. So we have a dog in the fight. You know, we have some expertise to contribute. We want you to know that a successful communication project involves professionally designed concepts that are grounded in what we know about our prospective audiences and our target audiences. There are going to be some people who are going to come in and they're going to know exactly what they want and they just want you to fix it. The other thing that would happen, especially at the beginning, is people would come in with work that was substandard. Brochures, websites, just stuff. And they wanted you to just change a little bit of the text for them. And we did a little bit of that at the beginning, but even that I started to say no to. I started to say to somebody who came in, that is substandard design, and I don't want anyone to think that Creative Services did this. So if we do this for you, it's gonna look like one of our products, and we can't do it. It took a while to be able to say that, but we eventually did. The other thing is Creative Services is not a fast food restaurant. You don't come in with an idea for a theater poster or for a show you're gonna launch and then you leave with the poster. Not to say that we wanna take forever to do things, but it's not a walk-in service. And sometimes people had that kind of impression too. So answer the phone. This might seem like a strange one, but I don't think our phones ring a whole lot anymore, but when mine rang, it was usually because someone on campus was dissatisfied with something. That's when they seemed to pick up the phone and call about it. And the point of fact is when we first started Creative Services, I was a little bit nervous about taking those calls because they were usually about print, and I didn't have a lot of background in print, and it made me pretty nervous. But I had to take the call, and what I discovered was the customer service calls actually make you better. Because you find out quickly what the problems are, what the challenges are, what people are frustrated by, and you can hear that and learn a lot about the work that you're going to be doing. You can also, during a call, since we very rarely use our phones anymore, it's all what we type or what we, you know, message to people, you can convey a lot of enthusiasm and commitment for working with someone and give them a sense that you are listening and that you know maybe there were some difficulties and you're trying to, you know, improve that for the future. So my recommendation is don't be afraid to take these calls and talk directly to people about what your offices and your teams do, because that's how you get better. That's how you learn what you need to improve. So quickly or quality? This was an early discussion for us too, because any team that I work with, I want to be able to respond quickly to a great idea. How many times do you sit in a room and you think of something great you could do for commencement or homecoming or whatever it is, but you have a week and you think, oh, I wish we'd had this idea like 3 weeks ago or a month ago. But I think you need, in a creative services team, what we wanted to build was a way for a nimble group of people to respond when those great ideas come in and to be able to actually do them. I thought initially that we might have to sacrifice some quality at first. Turns out I was wrong about that. Someone on our team said, let's do this quickly and let's do this well, but let's not assume we're going to have to sacrifice any quality. So a great example for us, we at William & Mary, the last day of class, seniors ring the bell in the Wren building on our campus. And it's one of those traditions that always gets a lot of play on Facebook and Twitter when we talk about it. And I thought, wouldn't it be great for alums to be able to see a video of ringing the bell? And so we thought about it, you know, like a week before the last day of classes. And I sort of trotted around and talked to different people on the team, and everybody said, yeah, we can do it. So we did. And it's just like any great idea. It's a lot more complicated when you actually get ready to do it, because what we found out was that you can't, the place where you film the students ringing the bell, you can't hear the bell. Because, I don't know, anyway. So we had to have one person sort of, you know, recording the bell ringing way up and somebody else filming the students ringing. But it worked. We got it done. You know, it was like a 30-second thing. People loved it. And my point is that we learned that you can do great work fast, and that more than once, we would quickly pull a group of people together and get something done when we were motivated by the idea, and we stopped our natural tendency of overthinking it and overplanning it. So print is different. Does anybody have currently have responsibility for print here? Okay. I now have enormous respect for communication professionals who, I want to read this one, who back in the day had print as their only option. This was pretty new to me. And as one of my colleagues at M. Stoner says, you know, in the print world, publish really means something. And I didn't think about it that way, but it makes a lot of sense. We had some early successes when we started creative services. We eliminated a lot of what I started calling stupid print, just stuff that was easy. Okay, yeah, we're not going to print that anymore. That's dumb. But you're still, on most campuses, I think you're still left with print, and it's usually now stuff that really matters, and it's high visibility stuff, or it's stuff that's related to fundraising, or it's stuff that, like a commencement program. I mean, it's going to be a while before we don't have to print a commencement program when parents want to see those names. You know, it's maybe we'll get to that point, but for now, we've still got some print to deal with. I could kind of rant on about this for a while, but I'm not going to. The one point that I want to make is that print has a built-in you're done point, and you lose control of it when you have to send it to the printer. And over the last year and a half, as I managed university publications at William & Mary, I thought back about the night that before we launched the William & Mary website, where literally until the point we hit launch, we were making edits, we were making changes. We were eating so much junk food the night before. We got these wonderful, fabulous ideas literally at midnight, and we implemented them in time for the launch the next day. You cannot do that with print. I mean, at some point, you've got to send it to a printer and hope that you got it all right. And if you want to make a change, you can. And if you want to make an improvement, you can. But there's a cha-ching in the background when that happens, because the printer will charge you. So I you know, just have a lot of respect for print and what it takes to do, and it's different than web. What time is it? I want to see how I am doing time-wise. 9:00. Okay. So setting up to people to disappoint you, and they will. People have a hard time figuring out what the point of their communication is. They come to you, they want a brochure, they want a website, they want a poster. They don't know what they're going to say, they don't know who their target audience is, but they want this stuff. And we did a lot of pushing back. So when they said our target audience is faculty, staff, and students, we said, no, it is not. You need to be much more specific than that. And so rather than getting disappointed by the fact that people weren't able to do a good job setting up their own communication projects, we just decided to help them do it and not be frustrated by the fact that they didn't know what they wanted or they didn't have any of their copy ready. I mean, they come in and they say, I can't really tell you how much I'm going to need until I see how you're going to lay it out, and then I'll give you the content. And we quickly decided that we don't start until you know what you're going to say, and we talk through some of this stuff. As soon as possible. The reason I have this in here is that when you have a new office, you want to be responsive, and we were pretty serious about customer service, and when people came in, we wanted to, you know, to help them, and the way to do that is to have a delivery deadline, right, to find out when they need it. And the most popular two answers to when do you need this are whenever you can fit it in or as soon as possible. And, you know, I'd been managing small and large projects for IT and lots of other organizations for years, and I cannot work back from as soon as possible. And I cannot work back from whenever you can fit it in. So I really did try to force people to give us a time frame. And sometimes the way to do that is to talk through the various stages of your project, to talk about strategy and concept and photo selection and copy editing and design and layout and all those things that you do for any kind of print piece. And quickly they realize, oh, I should have started my copy, you know, 4 weeks ago. So a bit of advice on that. Campus evangelists here, the third time's a charm. Yeah, we... Somebody on your campus, whether you're in creative services or not, needs to go around talking to all the senior administrators about why communications is important and how to do it well. And you can't get frustrated by the fact that you have to say it over and over and over. Because if you've taken any kind of public speaking class, you know, what do? You tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. And that kind of repetitive communication is exactly what you need on your campus. It's not that your administrators don't care about communications. They have a lot to think about, and they have a lot that can distract them, and you want to be in their face, making sure that they remember, hey, I'm over here, I'm doing this web thing, I'm doing this communications thing, I'm doing this marketing thing, and it's important, and here's why. So somebody needs to take that on as a responsibility. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, Alice in Wonderland, right? This seems simple, just like, you know, if you exercise, you'll be healthier, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to make decisions on campuses, sometimes because we're afraid, sometimes because we have to tell people what we decided, sometimes because we just can't get people in the same room at the same time to talk about it and decide. But if you know what you're trying to accomplish, that is one way to start narrowing down some of your options and at least head towards decision making. Sometimes you have to say no and people will thank you for it. My favorite example on this one is I had the head of the parking office call me. Every year they published a 20-page booklet with all the parking guidelines, and you got it when you bought your campus parking pass. And he wanted us to print it. And I said, you know, are you sure this is a good idea to print? He goes, yeah, we're pretty sure nobody reads it, but we want to print it one more time, and then we're going to talk to our committee about whether we can put it on the web. And for me, that was like ding, 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 ding. So I said, you know what, I don't think we should print it this year. I think we ought to do web. I've got some interns. I'll have them create the website, and then you'll have a web version. Oh, I don't know. You know, it was more like talking to my committee language, you know. So finally, and this was early on, finally I said, you know what, Bill, I can't do it this year. I said, I can build you a website, but I can't do the print. And I felt badly because he had no money, so I knew he wasn't going to be able to go off campus. And he said, all right, well, if that's the best you can do, web will be fine. Later heard from his boss, thank you so much. I'd been telling him that we really didn't need this print thing anymore, so thank you for saying no and getting us around having to do that. But don't be afraid to say yes. It doesn't always mean a lot of work. When you have a new unit, you want to be seen as responsive. You don't want to put this whole thing together and then go around telling everybody why you can't do the things they're asking you to do. The reason I was nervous at first was because in IT, when I said yes to things, it always translated into work. Always. Communications work, I don't know if it's the nature of it. I don't know if it's because people don't view it as their primary responsibility, so they can always get to it next year if they don't get to it this year. But we would say yes to all kinds of things. People would never come back and ask for them. Now, I didn't follow up with every one of those people. But if it was my boss, the president's office, the admission office, fundraising, you know, development office, I followed up. But you can say yes to a lot of stuff that never gets kicked off. Couple of bonus material things, just results. These are some of the things that some of the work we did in the first 18 months. And this is not all of it, but just some big projects that we did in addition to the regular stuff. So Lori gave me the 10-minute sign, so I want to stop and ask what other questions you all have. Yes. Yeah, we had a weekly, well, a couple things. We used something called Fogbugs to track support requests. Fogbugs, it's an open source product. Well, it's not really open source, I guess. we started using it to track CMS request, help requests and web requests. So everything came in through that email address, creative@wm.edu, and then we either assigned it to someone using FogBugs or whatever ticket tracking system you have. If it was something brand new and it was big and it was different, we had a weekly intake process where I met with the associate directors in our office and we decided, hey, are we going to do this one? Does this look like something we want to do? And for us at the beginning, it was, if this is something everybody's going to see, we want to do it. If this is something that's really important, tied to our campus messaging, tied to strategic planning, we want to do it. So, and there were certain things that we said, we're going to do this year, and we're going to tell them, this is the last year we're doing this for you. So, there was somebody in the back. Yes?
I apologize.
That's okay. You know, we did not. We did not. And we thought about it a lot, and we planned to. My advice, and the reason we didn't is because the budget cuts really hit at the time that we were putting this unit together. And we felt like it would be unfair to start charging departments for services when they had no money at that point either. So we didn't. That's such a campus culture thing. I will tell you that when something has no value, perceived value, everybody wants it. You know what I mean? And it's hard to control photography. We had a campus photographer. You'd think having a full-time photographer, that'd be plenty for a university. You know, there's something about even just a $25 charge that stops people from asking for something they really don't need. We tended to use instead, since we didn't have that chargeback model in place, she, you know, is not available to do that. We have a list of freelancers. Do you want to use a, you know, freelance photographer? We were cautious about that at the beginning, though, because the whole reason we put this group together was we wanted to stop all the crazy outsourcing that had been going on for all different kinds of projects. So I think that's really a campus culture thing. We did cost sharing. We, you know, people would come to us and say, I want a marketing plan for my office, and I want a student to run the social media. And we'd say, all right, you fund the student wages, and we'll oversee that work. So it was a way to extend our budget, you know, that way.
And how do you determine that you did?
It took a year. It took a year. And at the end of the year, I realized I need to say out loud, the transition is over. Because transition is not really a fully positive word. You know, it brings a certain amount of anxiety when you say transition. Like, I'm not where I am. I'm not where I was. I'm not where I'm going to be yet. It's just, it has some anxiety feeling to it. So I actually said out loud, all right, transition's over. We are a new creative services organization. We're still going to have to grow. We're still going to have to change. We're still going to have to modify, just like any vibrant organization does. But the transition's finished. So, yes?
Can you tell us how big your campus was, how many clients you serve, and whether you think this model is scaled or bigger or smaller?
Yeah. There are about 5,500 undergraduates at William & Mary, about 2,000 graduate students. Professional schools in business law, education, and marine science. You asked if how many clients? Oh my lord, there's 45. I mean, for the web, everybody, because we had an integrated web presence with one CMS, so we had 800 people using Cascade Server, so lots of clients there, and lots of clients and all the other. I couldn't even give you a number. Tina, could you? Yeah, which is a lot. Whether it would scale is, you know, one of the problems with doing something really well is people want you to do more of it, and you've pulled it off and you've made it look easy, and then they want more. And like, for instance, we never got the video resource that we wanted, but we did 15 videos because we didn't feel like as a team we could be creative services and say, but we don't do video, even though we didn't get the resource to do it. So I had people on the team that were just interested and wanted to do it. Does it scale? Yeah, but you got to continue to get those partnerships. And what would happen is every time somebody, this happened when I was there, when somebody would get ready to hire a designer, a creative person, I'd say, whoa, should that person work over here? You know, and sometimes we were successful in that. Sometimes it was a dotted line relationship. Sometimes we changed the scope of what that person was going to do because there was this central creative unit. Yes?
You mentioned the integration process and that some people have the skills. Did you provide training to them, or was it more training on the job? And then the other part of the question is totally unrelated, but so I'll ask it. Did you experience creative burnout, and how did you handle
The first half of your question, how do you teach people? For years, it's not that I don't believe in training, but I feel like you send people to training and you must immediately give them a project that uses that training. And it's a real project. It's not a go create a website and see how it looks now that you know how to do web. It's a real project. So they go to the training with the expectation, hey, there's this thing I'm going to be working on. So we spend a lot of time and money on professional development and training. But the better way to do training is to put people on a project that allows them. So it has to be a project where there's either somebody else that's going to do the same kind of thing they are that's kind of skilled already, or it has to be a project that has a longer time frame, so that you build in time for that person to kind of learn what they're supposed to do. The other thing is, you know, have a great group of people. If you have a great team of people who are willing to share how they learned to do stuff, that's the way to teach them. I was in a thing yesterday about for web managers, and I told them more than half of the people that I've ever hired in my career did not have the skills they were supposed to have to do the job I was hiring them for. I hired them because they were great people and could do great work, not because of the skill set they had.
Yes. We're down to 1 minute.
And I can stay. Yes.
Related, I think this is related to that because you talk about the skills, but I wonder, unless you were really lucky, you probably had culture clash with bringing these people together. And I wonder if maybe this is hard for you to talk with some of the team members in the room, but whether there were some people actually who weren't excited about it, were not going to fit, you had to peel off.
Right before we made the announcement, two of the folks on the print side had already decided to take an early retirement option. In part, I'm sure it was because they knew this was coming and they weren't sure they wanted to do it. But they stayed around for a while and they were fine. There was nobody on the team who didn't want to do it and showed it, which was great. I will say that in the first 3 months, everybody was excited. The second 6 months, everybody was like, oh, wow, yeah, she really means it. We're really going to do all this stuff and we're all going to figure out how to learn how to do it. And that was a little bit of stress. And back to your creative burnout question, by the way, I forgot to answer that. I don't think we had that yet. So, all right, I'll stay up in case you all have other questions. Thank you.